Good afternoon. It's a beautiful afternoon out there today. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Our topic today is Port Mackenzie. And if you looked at our website, we call it the little port that could. And today we have the port director on with us, Mark Van Dongen. And he's going to tell us the status of this port and all that's going on with it. And it's a lot. So this is your chance to really get updated on Port Mackenzie and port issues in South Central. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got questions or concerns or curiosities, you can call us at 550-8433 and pose those questions directly to Mark Van Dongen. If you're outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we'll also take your email. You can send them to hometown@alaskapublic.org. This program is live right now. We'll take your questions, but we repeat it this evening at 7, and you can't call in then, so we hope you'll call in now. I'd definitely like to direct you to our website, alaskapublic.org. We've got lots of background information on Port Mackenzie. You can see their website, where they've got a lot of little videos on there about things happening at the port, which are kind of awesome, big machines working, and you can read background there. So I'd like to welcome Mark Van Dongen. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Kathleen.
And I wanted to ask you right off the bat, how do you get to be the director of a port, and how do we know you're going to be good at it? Now, you've been there since, what, 2000?
Actually, fall of 1999 is when I started.
Fall of 1999. And how does one scope out that job as being the director of a port? You become, probably you work for the Corps of Engineers for a while.
Well, I did. I was in the Corps for 24 years as a military officer, and I retired in 1996. I spent a few years as CEO of a couple of Native corporations, and then was selected to be the project manager for the initial barge dock and access road that was built at Port Mackenzie. Mm-hmm. Shortly after that, I became the port director.
So that was a little preview of the job. They got to see you on the job, and they hired you after that, huh?
I think it kind of worked that way.
Now, I want to tell readers or listeners that we rescheduled this show because Mark drove all the way down to Anchorage March 14th, I think, and couldn't quite get here in time, and we had to reschedule him. And I just want to thank him publicly for coming down again. I think it's so important that we get to hear about Port Mackenzie and all the plans behind it. So I just really want to thank you for coming down again.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So I also wanted to start, there's lots of controversial issues around the port, but I'd like to start with a little bit of history and, you know, how big is the port right now? It's in an expansion mode. Let's start there. It opened in 1999, I think, right?
Well, that was our initial construction. The conceptual idea for the port started back in the 1970s. The first port commission was formed in 1988 when they extended the Point Mackenzie Road from where the general store is there now down to close to the port. The conceptual plans were done in the 1990s, and then we started construction of a 1.25-mile access road and the initial barge dock that was started in the fall of 1999 and completed in the summer of 2003. And then we built our initial deep draft dock in 2004, completed it in 2005. Since then, we've more than doubled the size of our barge dock. We just completed that this past year. We added 8.2 acres to the 6.75 acres that we had before. So we have a total of 14.7 acres there now, mm-hmm. plus a 1,200-foot-long deep draft dock that at low tide, we still have 60 feet of water. At high tide, it averages about 88 feet of water. Mm-hmm. So we can handle the world's largest ships, Panamax-sized ships, even Cape-class vessels at Port Mackenzie.
Mm. You know, I want to direct people to the alaskapublic.org website because we have some photos there that show a couple of different phases of the port's development. And so you and I joked because in our write-up, I called it, if you're on the coastal trail and you look across, during the day you see like a little smudge over there that's Port Mackenzie. And I meant that only because it's kind of small still. I didn't mean it in any denigrating way, but a lot's been happening, and it's been getting bigger. And maybe it isn't so small anymore, and it's going to get even bigger. You have lights on at night, right?
We do, and actually, we're the largest port in the state of Alaska. We have 14 square miles that are zoned commercial and industrial only. No residential will be allowed inside the port district. 14 square miles in our port district immediately adjacent to our docks.
So you're saying you're the biggest port because you've got the territory around the port.
That's correct.
So
And someday, not too distant future, we'll be the largest port as far as volume as well. Within 5 years of the rail being completed, I project our tonnage will be the largest of any port in the state.
Well, let's get to some of that. There's a lot to talk about there. Did you cover your sort of, let's see, if you've answered all my questions, you've had tenants at the port already. I know that wood chips went out from there.
Yeah, we started out, our first company was AMC, Alutiiq Manufacturing Contractors. They started out constructing and barging HUD houses to native communities. They shipped a total of 68 houses. Since then, they've done a variety of other projects for Alyeska, for the military. They built the pump modules for the pump stations on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. That was a $30 or $40 million project that was built at Port McKenzie. And now they do truckable modules for the North Slope, for the oil companies on the slope. And so they do a variety of work there. Mm-hmm. Then MPI was the wood chip company. That's our anchor tenant at the port. They still are, yes. They have a lease right above our barge dock. They built a large $7 million conveyor system down 120-foot bluff down to our docks. And they started out exporting wood chips and saw logs and have since branched out to importing cement. They partner with Klondike, which is a concrete company, and now import cement. We only bring in about 10% of the cement that comes into the inlet. But what happened when we started doing that is the price of cement went from about $176 a ton down to $125 a ton because of that competition. Mm. The region uses about 166,000 tons a year of cement. So we're now saving the South Central region about $8.3 million a year on the cost of our construction projects that utilize cement for their concrete.
A direct result of having two places that cement can come into?
Exactly.
Wow. We like competition. That's good for business, right? Who's paying for the port right now? Is it government money that's paying for it right now?
Well, we get funds from a variety of sources. We've had federal grants from the Federal Transit Administration. We've had grants from the Federal Highway Administration for road upgrades. We've had grants from the state of Alaska that built our initial barge dock and our deep draft dock. We've also had private companies like NPI. They contributed $3 million towards the construction of our deep draft dock. Mm-hmm. So that was a public-private partnership to get that built. We've had grants from the Economic Development Administration. That's how we did our barge dock expansion. And so we seek funds from a variety of sources. So far, it hasn't cost the borough taxpayers any funds other than my salary each year. And our finance director is keeping track of that. We're going to be paying that back once we get the rail in.
Now, you have a date when you expect to be profitable, right?
Well, yes. I believe in 2014, we've already had 1 year of net profits. But 2014 is when I project we'll become profitable every year. That's when we expect to start trucking coal down from Sutton. About 500,000 tons a year. And then when the rail line is completed, there'll be significant net profits, $1.5 to $5 million a year once the rail is completed.
All right. Now, there's a lot that the Port McKenzie is kind of a hub for a lot of development. And I do think that since it's across the inlet from Anchorage, we don't see everything that's going on over there. By the way, I want to tell folks, if you just joined us, I'm talking with Mark Van Dongen, the director of Port McKenzie. I went to your website and I saw, you know, the Susitna Ferry represented there. I saw the rail extension represented there. And I read that, you know, the bridge is part of an overall kind of look at transportation in this region. So I wanted to invite you to address those. What do you think about, are we going to get a Susitna Ferry? Is it actually going to run someday?
Well, that's still to be determined. We actually have completed construction on the vessel. It's down in Ketchikan right now. We're making progress on the ferry landings. We have to have landings on each side of the inlet. And we have a permit to build a landing at Port McKenzie. We've updated the environmental. We're waiting on final approval from the Federal Transit Administration before our assembly can make a decision whether we want to construct that. If we do, it would be built in the summer of 2013. Mm-hmm. The Anchorage side, we're making progress as well, thanks to both Mayor Sullivan and Mayor DeVilvis from the borough. We now have a letter of support from the Muni supporting our conceptual design for the ferry landing. And we've also received a letter from the railroad, which owns the property there at Ship Creek that we need to put the landing at. And we've submitted a formal application to the Corps for a permit. Their public notice is published right now. We're waiting for that to close. And so if we get the permit, it's a three-year process. There's another permit that has to be obtained from the National Marine Fisheries Service. We have to do a final design. We have to bid the project. Then the contractor needs a year's lead time to order materials, get the steel galvanized and fabricated and get it shipped up here. And then we could build it the third year. So depending on getting the permits, getting the additional funding that we need to build both landings, and whether our assembly wants to move forward to bring the ferry up, it still remains to be seen whether we're going to be running it. We're also looking at potential alternative uses for the vessel with the Navy or with the Alaska Marine Highway System down in Southeast.
Interesting. So that's still to be decided. I mean, we know that around the country, ferry systems are really rarely paying for themselves. So that'd be part of what you'd be looking at, right?
Yeah, most certainly. You have to do a cost analysis, which we've done a preliminary analysis. And you're correct. There isn't a ferry system that I'm aware of that even breaks even, much more than makes money. And so they have to be subsidized. And it's a matter of whether our assembly elects to do that.
So maybe you're going to make so much money at the port that you can just subsidize the ferry.
Well, again, that's up to our assembly. That's a possibility.
That's a decision. Then I know when we had the Port of Anchorage on the show, that was the first question we got was a listener who said, are we ever going to get that ferry? So it's out there in people's minds, and I think they like the idea of it. And it would go down to Tyonek. It could potentially have a kind of a circuit around Cook Inlet.
Potentially, it could go to Tyonek or to Kenai, depending on whether Tyonek has, there's several big projects that could happen at Tyonek. The coal field that they have there, they're looking at developing. They're looking at a coal to liquids or coal to gas type facility. There's other projects that they're looking at, and if any of those happen, where there might be several hundred people needing to work over there
day.
And
uh-huh.
get materials back and forth, yeah. then that could become a viable yeah. route for the yeah. ferry as well.
And the prison that's at Port McKenzie is sort of considered a potential reason people might take a ferry across, right?
Most certainly. There'll be 350 people working at the prison once it ramps up. They're going to start, I believe, this September. Bringing initial prisoners, and then they'll gradually increase that, and over about a year's time, they'll ramp up to where they'll have 350 employees, guards and administrative staff. A high percentage, I would assume, would be coming from Anchorage and would need to get back and forth either on the ferry or the bridge.
Right. It would be a long drive all the way around.
Most, yeah. It's,
what is it, 60 miles? I'm not sure. If you drove up the glen.
No, it's further than that. From the intersection at the Parks Highway and Connect Goose Bay Road, it's 38 miles from there down to our port. It's a little bit shorter to the prison, but then you've got another 50 miles from Wasilla to Anchorage, so it's probably close to 80 miles.
Yeah, so we're talking like an 80-mile round trip twice a day.
Kind of.
That's a bit of a commute to just go to work every day.
Right.
Well, we've got a caller, so let's go to the lines. Hello, Carolyn.
Yeah, this is Caroline. Kathleen, thank you for this program. And sir, thank you for making the drive, because I know how irritating those drives can be. I wanted to ask a couple of questions on a couple of things you've touched on. You mentioned that you have the chips going out. I remember seeing an article about the school in Craig that some lady got it organized, and they have their heat for that school being done from waste items coming out of the forest there. And Sea Alaska apparently is going in the route of burning wood, but unfortunately theirs is from pellets coming in from Canada. So my question is anyone going to look at doing making pellets? Because pellets into the villages would certainly not be a worry in terms of a barge dropping oil, which is something that's always been a problem up here. That would seem to be a good opportunity. And then I'm glad to know that you're not dependent on just the federal government, because it looks like our railroad's got a real problem coming up. And finally, you mentioned Tionic, and I heard that there's going to be exploration, or it's maybe already started, over at Spur in order to get energy out of the volcano, and whether or not that would be along the same route that you'd take for Tionic.
Well, thanks, Caroline. How about that, Mark? Let's
okay,
tackle some
well,
of those.
To answer your first question on the pellets, NPI, the wood chip company there at Port McKenzie, has already done that. They've actually built a manufacturing plant up in Fairbanks and are currently producing pellets for wood stoves up in the Fairbanks area to make those more efficient and less polluting than just burning wood. They're not exporting wood chips right now. The world market, you know, commodities go up and down, and it's not cost effective. But when they have access to more timber closer to the port, which I think is going to happen in the near future based on the state's recent legislation to open up areas for timber harvest here, then I expect there's a good chance they'll be exporting wood chips again. And the Tionic.
One final question that has to do with the economics of, because I know having taken the ferry from Washington over to, those islands off the coast, I can't remember, San Juan's, whether or not the ferry could pencil out when you consider that the bridge that they're planning is only a two-way bridge, and the length of time that it's going to take to get across that, you know, with if people are stacked up, the cost of the bridge versus the ferry and having the two landings. That was the final thing that I was going to ask about. And thank you so much.
Well, the concept on the ferry was, you know, generally you have a ferry operating before a bridge is built in most areas anyways. And that was our concept. We were hoping to already have the ferry landings constructed by now so that as soon as the vessel was done, we could bring it up and operate it. But funding was a problem, and politics were a problem, to be frank, and we're not there yet. We're still working on it. We're still making progress. And if a ferry is brought up here, it could help construct the bridge when the bridge is built. It could ferry workers across and materials across where you can work from both sides at the same time. And then when a bridge is done, the ferry could be used for alternative routes like we talked about to Tionic or Kenai.
Okay. And I think there's one more in there. Was there one more? Or did we cover everything? I think we got it. Nothing else on your list, Mark?
Yeah. Well, Kathleen, there's one thing we haven't touched on that I'd like to emphasize is that Port McKenzie, you know, we're developing Port McKenzie not to compete with the Port of Anchorage, but to be a complementary port. Our focus for developing Port McKenzie is to export natural resources. And so the Port of Anchorage could do that, but not as well as Port McKenzie. And the reason is we have deeper water. We have 60 feet of water versus 35 feet of water at the Port of Anchorage. So the ships we bring in at Port McKenzie can't even land at the Port of Anchorage because the water's not deep enough.
Mm-hmm.
The coal ship we brought in a year or so ago, that had a draft of 45.3 feet, and you need 10 more feet below that. So you need at least 55 feet of water. And so our focus is to export natural resources. That'll create jobs in the interior for mines. There's multiple mines that could be developed economically export the materials, lead, zinc, molybdenum, coal, fuel from the refineries. We have our first fuel tank farm going in next summer. You know, the Port of Anchorage has a lot of fuel tanks there now. There's not really room to add more. Port McKenzie is a logical place to put additional fuel tanks. And we're going to put them on the backside of a ridge where if there's ever a spill or a fire, it can be contained on the uplands rather than risking having a spill into the inlet.
And that'd be on your 14 square miles of your own land, so you wouldn't be abutting, say, like a Government Hill kind of housing.
That's
correct. Well, that's really interesting. I actually want to get to the Port of Anchorage, but before we go there, actually, I want to touch on the bridge, just because that's also something that pops up on the Port McKenzie webpage. And you know, I gather it's there because maybe there'd be advantages to shipping stuff back and forth between the two ports, or, you know, what does Port McKenzie think about the bridge?
Well, I'm the number one supporter of the bridge. I've been for years. I think it's now is the time to be building the bridge. I think the region needs it. What most people don't realize is within 50 years, there's going to be 1 million people between the valley and Anchorage, give or take a few years, within about 50 years. If you just take our current population and the current projections, the average in the valley has been about 4.5% increase a year. Anchorage has been about 0.5% a year. And within 50 years, there's going to be about 500,000 and then in each location. And then after that, the valley will continue to grow. And with only 90,000 people in the valley right now, it's crowded on the Glen Highway. A good example was my last effort to come down for this show. There was an accident. There were a nine-car accident at Muldoon, and traffic was backed up for 2.5 miles for several hours.
Ouch.
And if we had an alternate route to get into Anchorage, I could have just zipped across the bridge from Port McKenzie and been here on time.
Yeah. I want to throw out our phone numbers just because we're talking about a lot of really good things here, and I think people might have questions. So you can continue. Just 1 second. I want to say, folks, if you want to talk to Mark Van Dongen about Port McKenzie, give us a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. But so go ahead. I kind of interrupted
you. Okay, so the bridge, why do we need the bridge? Commercial and industrial development. You know, an average acre of land for commercial development in the Anchorage Bowl ranges in cost from $600,000 to $1.2 million an acre. And so small businesses that are here can't afford to expand, but more importantly, new businesses that might want to come to our region aren't coming because it's too expensive to even purchase a land. I'm not talking about downtown Anchorage. I'm talking about like where the Moose's Tooth is. Mm-hmm. That's how expensive the land is. And so with a connection with either the ferry or the bridge over to the Port McKenzie side, we have 14 square miles, just 2 miles away from Anchorage, that's zoned for commercial and industrial development. That'll attract businesses. It'll allow other businesses to expand. It'll allow for residential expansion and development and improve recreational opportunities. You're not allowed to snow machine, for instance, in the Anchorage Bowl area. You have to pack up and drive somewhere, and it's an all-day event where if the bridge is built or the ferry is running, people could come across after work, bring their snow machines over, snow machine for a couple hours, and be home for the 10 o'clock news.
Well, I'm going to interrupt here for just a second. I'd love to get a caller on. We've got a couple callers stacked up. Tim, you're on from Palmer. What's your question?
Hey there, thanks for taking my call. And Mark, I had a question for you in regards to what measures the port might be taking when exporting coal from Port McKenzie. I definitely have heard from friends and neighbors down in the Seward that the export terminal there has caused issues in regards to putting coal dust into the community. I wanted to find out from you if there was going to be something that was done differently at Port McKenzie.
Well, most certainly there will be. There'll be mitigation measures that'll be required for dust control. The conveyor system will be completely covered so dust doesn't blow into the inlet. There'll be watering sources up where the coal is stockpiled, where they'll be able to water the coal and keep the dust down. We'll develop a series of mitigation measures just like we have for scrap metal operations and any other hazardous type material. We'll have a set of criteria that companies will have to meet before we'll allow them to export.
You also don't have... You don't have the residents close in like you do in Seward, too, possibly.
That was actually one of my questions, I guess, too, is part of the motivation to bring coal through Port McKenzie to remove the export facility or remove the traffic of coal going through Seward so that there's less of an impact on people, or is that just going to kind of replace an impact with people that are going to be over there in Anchorage?
Good question.
Yeah, actually, I don't believe once we start bringing coal into Port McKenzie, I don't believe that will replace the coal going out of Seward. I believe Usabelli's intent is to export from both locations. They have one major customer, Japan Power, that purchases 20 million tons of coal a year on the world market for their power plants in Japan. And right now, they only export about 1 or 1.2 million tons out of Seward. And so I think Usabelli's intent is to try to do, initially they'll probably start out 1 or 1.5 million tons, work the way up to 3 million tons a year at Port McKenzie, but continue to export 1 or 1.2 million a year out of Seward and utilize both locations.
One other quick question for you, Mark, and I appreciate your time. The a couple of the folks, I live actually near the proposed Wishbone Hill mine, and unfortunately I'm not thrilled about the development, and a number of the neighbors that I've got are actually already posted their homes for sale, including some people who've worked for coal companies in the past. And one of those has looked at the economics from kind of the back of the envelope side and said there's no way that they could afford to bring it through Port McKenzie. And I'm wondering what assurance you have that you would bring that revenue in from bringing coal from Sutton. It seems like doing the truck route is going to be just extraordinarily expensive in comparison to do the train route down to Seward.
Well, actually, it's less expensive to truck it to Port McKenzie than it would be to rail it because to Seward, because you'd have to handle it twice. You'd have to load trucks up at Wishbone Hill and then go down to Palmer with the trucks and then load it onto the rail. And then the rail, once it gets down to Moose Pass, they can't take the whole train up the hill there at once. They have to take the train apart. And then there's a dead end at the end of the rail. It's not an efficient offload facility. And it would actually cost more to take that coal to Seward than it would be to just truck it, load it on a truck with pup trailers and take it directly to Port McKenzie.
So are you saying there's going to be a rail that would go straight to the mine mouth up at Wishbone Hill?
No, there won't. There won't be. So they'll have to truck it at least to Palmer. If they want to put it on the rail to go to Seward, they'd still have to truck it to Palmer to get it onto the rail. But if they just load the trucks and drive the trucks directly to Port McKenzie, that's much less costly and more efficient.
So Tim,
Go ahead. Oh, Belly's indicated to you that they're definitely going to go through Port McKenzie, so you'll definitely get that revenue.
That's what they've indicated to me. In fact, I've already obtained a permit to modify our deep draft dock for their needs to add 6 piles to our conveyor system there and an extra tie-down dolphin. I've already obtained a permit so that they can build that structure next summer and then start shipping coal the following summer.
Interesting. Okay.
So,
well,
Tim,
appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. We got other people lined up, and I'd like to give them an opportunity, too. So thanks a lot for calling. Julian, you're on the line from Anchorage. What's your question?
Thank you. Everything you said about the port in the future seems to be highly dependent on the rail extension. I'm curious about how you're going to pay for the extension.
Well, so far we've received $92.5 million from the state towards the construction of the rail. There's additional funding in this current legislative cycle, $23.5 million from the general fund and then a $30 million bond. And so that takes us up to $146 million out of, we need a total of $272.5 million to build the rail. So we're at about 53% of the funding that we need. If we continue for the next 3 years at $49 million a year is kind of what we've been averaging, then that'll complete the funding that we need to complete the rail. We actually started construction on it 2 years ago. We're going into our third year of construction this summer.
Thank you.
Thanks, Julian. We're going to talk a lot more about the rail extension and expect you to bring us up to date on it, because obviously people have questions about it. So we'll be right back. This is Hometown Alaska. My guest, Mark Van Dongen from Port McKenzie, and this is Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. We're having a great show today on Port McKenzie. Lots of great questions from callers. I really appreciate it. We have Mark Van Dongen, the director of Port McKenzie. And we thought we'd start back this second half hour talking about the rail extension, because we've entertained a couple questions. And I think that there's some information you've got, Mark, to bring us up to date. I want to throw out those numbers again for folks who are interested. It's 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. Please think about an email to hometownatalaskapublic.org. And once we get through the rail extension, we do have an email coming up, so we'll tackle that then. But let's talk about the rail extension.
Okay, Kathleen. The rail is the crown jewel for the development of Port McKenzie. We started out 13 years ago with five goals. To bring in utilities to the port. The nearest utilities were 11 miles away. To construct our initial docks, the barge dock and deep draft dock, to complete road improvements, to pave the Point McKenzie Road, upgrade KGB Road, to develop a transportation link, either the ferry or the bridge, and then the crown jewel is the rail link. And that's critical for the long-term development of Port McKenzie. And the rail wouldn't be happening right now if we hadn't have done all those other things. But we've made significant progress in the last 12 years, and we're about halfway funded now on the rail line. And once the rail is completed, we'll be able to efficiently bring in large volumes of commodities. The University of Alaska has identified over 15 major deposits in the interior within a 50-mile radius of the existing rail line. I'll give you one example, a limestone deposit at mile 38 just north of Fairbanks, between Fairbanks and Livengood. There's a 1.6 billion ton deposit of high-grade limestone. Whenever a gas line comes down from the slope, whether it's the Aegea line or a smaller spur line, it's going to have to go right by this site. And then you'd be able to build a cement manufacturing plant right on site and operate it off of natural gas within commuting distance of both Fairbanks and Livengood. It'll create hundreds of jobs. That limestone at 1.6 billion tons would reduce down to about 800 million tons of cement. And so you could export 4 million tons a year. That's four times the annual coal that currently goes out of Seward. 4 million tons a year for 200 years. That's just one deposit. That's 15% of the lower 48's annual consumption of cement for 200 years.
Holy cow.
There's other large deposits of limestone. There's lead, zinc, molybdenum, nickel, copper. There's fuel from the North Pole refinery. There's a whole list of sand and gravel, wood chips, saw logs. There's all kinds of commodities.
It's almost like you want to say, what's been taking you so long to get the port?
Well, and so that's our vision at Port McKenzie.
That's why
we're building the port. It'll create more jobs in the interior to operate these mines. It'll create jobs for the railroad. It'll increase revenue to the railroad. It'll also create jobs at Port McKenzie.
Now, where's this rail extension going to go exactly?
We started at the Port McKenzie end. So 2 years ago, we started on a one-mile rail loop. So we have an efficient offload facility that doesn't just dead end. You can just move the train forward, open up the bottom of the cars, drop out the coal, and convey it into a pile. And so we started on that 2 years ago. We're going to finish up phase three of our three phases this coming summer. It's already been awarded to Bristol Construction. And they're also going to construct the first 5 miles of the rail line going north from the port up towards the agricultural district. Then the rail will go through the agricultural district. It'll pass west of Big Lake and about a mile and a half west of Horseshoe Lake. And then it'll connect up at the Parks Highway in Houston, just on the Wasilla side of the Little Sioux River. And so the rail is on the south side of the Parks Highway there. That's what it'll connect. And so we're bidding out that portion of the rail line. That's being bid right now. I expect bids will be open the 1st of May for that T intersection up there at the mm-hmm. Parks Highway.
Mm-hmm. And how many miles of extended rail is it? I mean, are we talking 15 or?
It's 32 miles is
32
what,
miles
what the
total.
Distance is.
Okay. And you have the loop already built at Port McKenzie? So
it'll be finished up this summer.
Okay.
The sub base, you know, the embankment portion. Mm-hmm. We're going to do that for the whole 32 miles. And then the last two phases are to put the, you know, the small rock that goes on top and then to lay the rails. That'll be the last two phases where you do all that at one time.
Right, right. I know I read an article about, I think it was former Mayor Rick Maestrom, who's been saying this is as big as the Parks Highway, getting this through. It's the next biggest infrastructure that we're going to do in the state that's going to open the state up.
It's really the first big infrastructure project in the state since the Parks Highway was built.
Uh-huh, yeah. Now, are you going by people's houses? Does this rail extension go through pretty empty territory, or does it go through populated territory?
No, it doesn't pass close to houses at all. I just bought a lot. My wife and I bought a lot on Horseshoe Lake last year, and knowing that the rail was going to be a mile and a half away from there. But I don't expect we'll even hear the trains go by. Mm-hmm. If we do, it'll be music to my ears.
Yeah.
But that
might be you, Mark, though.
Well, but there's no road crossings. There's no reason the trains would be blowing their whistles. And when we get real busy, you know, maybe we'll have a train a day. You know, it takes that long to load 100 rail cars and to get it down and get it turned around and go back. So you might have one go down and one come back in a day. You know, mm-hmm. it's not like we're going to have trains coming by every 20 minutes.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, great. What else about the rail extension do you want people to know about? You're still waiting for more funding. Is there anything in this year's capital budget that you're waiting on?
Well, yeah, we're making great progress. The governor actually proposed a $110 million bond package for the voters to approve this fall. That got reduced down to $30 million by the legislature. But the legislature also authorized another $23.5 million out of the general fund. So that $23.5 million will enable us to bid out another phase this summer. And then if the bonds are approved, they'll be lumped in with other projects, other transportation projects that the state will ask the voters to approve.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's approved, then that'll enable us to bid out another phase next winter for the following summer.
Yeah.
and keep the project moving. So if we can then get $49 million a year more for the next 3 years, that'll complete the funding that we need. And within 4 years from now, by the end of 2016, we hope to have the rail line completed.
Okay. Well, let's see. I promised that we were going to go to this one email that we had, and I'm just going to give it to you right now, Mark. It's coming to us from Dennis Ranzi, and Dennis says, Port McKenzie Rail Spur is a project doomed to failure. It would cross numerous wetlands, and it also would cut off many trails used by locals. The port itself is in constant competition with the Port of Anchorage for both funding and business. Port Mac has significantly more problems with ice and shallow water than Anchorage. We fiscal conservatives very much object to two ports a few miles apart, both receiving never-ending funding. Well, there's definitely a perspective there. Would you like to have this to look at?
Well, I can address the issues here. As far as the route of the rail, we had an environmental impact study completed. It looked at a half a dozen alternative routes, and the route that was determined to be the least negative impact was the route that we have right now. And it does pass through a couple of miles or 2.5 miles of low-value wetlands. They're not high-value wetlands. And there are some trails that cross, but we're taking that into consideration on the design of the rail. There'll be crossings, going underneath the rail for dog sled teams, for snow machiners to use. All the traditional trails that are there now will remain. As far as competing for funding, the total funding that we've received from the state for our docks at Port McKenzie, we received $7.2 million for the initial 1.25-mile road access plus the barge dock that was built. And then we received $10 million for the deep draft dock. So $17.2 million is what the state has given us. It's not like it's been hundreds of millions of dollars. It's been a relatively small amount. We've been successful at also getting some federal grants and private businesses to contribute towards the construction of the port. And once the rail is completed, the port will be self-sustainable just from the revenue that will generate from wharfage and dockage from what the rail brings down for export.
Mm-hmm. Did you cover everything in that email?
One other point I want to make, another big advantage of our location at Port McKenzie is it doesn't require any dredging. When I was with the Corps of Engineers, I used to sign the annual dredging contracts for the Port of Anchorage, and this was back in the mid-90s, and it was $15 million a year was the average cost. I'm sure it's more than that now. To maintain 35 feet of water at the Port of Anchorage, mm-hmm. where we have 60 feet of water at Port McKenzie, and it doesn't require any subsidy from the federal government for dredging. We don't have to dredge. We're at the narrowest part of the inlet and where the currents are a little bit faster, and it self-scours, and so there's no dredging required.
Very interesting. All right. I'd love to go to a caller. Did you cover everything you wanted to get? Okay. Bob, welcome to Hometown Alaska. You're calling from Homer.
Thank you, Kathleen. Really appreciate the show. This is Bob Shavelson with Cook and Light Keeper, and appreciate Mark being on here, too. And I'll be very frank. I've looked at a lot of large projects in Cook Inlet, and this one has all the hallmarks of another massive public boondoggle. We've looked at the Fast Ferry. We've looked at Goose Creek Jail, the bridge, all these things. There's really no serious business plan. If you pull things apart, everything hinges on this. Build it and they will come. There's no contracts in place. Instead, something could happen. A mine could be built. There's all this wishful thinking when at the same time, as another caller pointed out, we've got three tidewater ports in South Central Alaska and they could be utilized. So my question really has to do with the dangerous docking conditions here, and Mark just alluded to that. At Port Mac, you've got an extremely dangerous situation where you have current speeds upwards of six knots on the dock face. So in a letter that Governor Bill Sheffield wrote in May 2010 to the Surface Transportation Board, he quoted you, Mark, as saying that you would prefer to shut down the port during winter, during ice conditions, to make it safer. And so my question is, would you be shutting down the port during winter icing conditions? And if no, what new technology would you use to keep these massive bulk carriers against that dock with ice and six-knot currents?
Okay, Bob. Number one, we've already proven that we can import and export with Panamax-sized ships in the middle of winter. We've loaded the world's largest woodchip vessel at 15 below zero with 2 feet of ice with six-knot currents. We haven't had a single line on a single vessel break at Port McKenzie. I do require additional safety precautions to be taken. We require extra lines to be placed. We require tugboats to stand by to keep the ice loose in the wintertime. And if there is a problem, the tugboats could assist the vessel so that there wouldn't be any damage to the vessel or the docks. And so we've already proven we can do that. And I have made the statement, and I'll continue to make the statement, that I would prefer ships not to come in the winter because that's the advantage that we have with commodities. We could stockpile commodities in the wintertime from end of December through the middle of March, rather than risk bringing ships in the winter. Sometimes the Coast Guard actually shuts the inlet down in the winter when the ice gets bad. I know you've seen that in the past. And then ships have to stay down in Homer or Kodiak and wait a week or 10 days before they're allowed to come up inlet. And, you know, it's $25,000 to $35,000 a day for these ships to be anywhere. And so why risk doing that in the winter when you can just stockpile coal or wood chips or whatever the commodity is for a couple of months, and then after the ice goes out, bring the ships in where you know they won't have to risk waiting and also have less potential for a problem at the dock. So that's why I've made that statement. That being said, if a company or a captain wants to bring a ship in a winter, we'll let them do it, providing they do the extra precautions that I require at our port. We've already proven it's been that we've been able to safely do it.
Are you saying that the Port of Anchorage doesn't have those same issues?
They do. The Port of Anchorage is a little more protected. They're in a cove. That's why they have to do the dredging there, because they're in a cove and you get a like a back eddy, like a curve on a river. And at slack tides, the silt settle out, and but it slows the current down a little bit. The current's actually more of a concern on the incoming tide at the Port of Anchorage, where at Port McKenzie, the concern is more on the outgoing, on the ebb tide, because you have the rivers up above, the Kinnick River and the Matanuska and the various streams that are pushing that flow a little bit faster on the outgoing, and then they're pushing against the incoming, and it actually slows the incoming down. And so my main concern is with the outgoing, with the ebb tide. And we, you know, we have our ships come in, they leave Homer at low slack tide, they ride the tide in to Port McKenzie, they come through the shoals at high tide, so there is no shoal, and it's a very simple process for them to come in, make a left turn, and come into our dock, and when they depart, they just pull straight out, and they go with the outgoing tide on the way out, so it's already high tide when they go across the Cook Inlet Shoal, and then they ride the tide back down to Homer.
Well, Bob, did we get your questions?
You did. And if I could just jump with one more thing, because another caller talked about operations and maintenance costs, and Mark, you made the statement that this will pay for itself. And, you know, those were the same representations that were put forward for the Goose Creek Jail. And I think a lot of legislators were very surprised to hear that there was going to be, over $225 million a year in operational costs for this jail, and nobody knew how that was going to be paid for. And we see the same lack of definiteness here. And so my question is, do you have any contracts to ship or to sell coal or any other commodity through the rail or the port?
Well, the port doesn't make the contracts. The companies that are exporting the commodities do that. But I can tell you we have companies at the port right now, AMC, NPI, Klondike. We have two new leases that this past fall. We have Pac Arctic Trucking and Central Alaska Energy. Pac Arctic Trucking is a logistical company, a trucking company, and CAE is a company that's going to be building our fuel tank farm next summer. We have two more companies that have applied for leases that we're processing right now, Quality Asphalt, which is one of the larger construction companies in South Central, and MGK International, which is a company that wants to export scrap metal. We have more companies that are going to submit lease applications. We have companies like CH2M Hill and Nana Construction that are bidding sea lift module construction based on building the modules at Port McKenzie. They haven't been a low bidder yet, and we're waiting for the gas line of some sort to be built before I expect there'll be a lot of more modules constructed. But there's two large companies that are proposing to build those at Port McKenzie. We have another company, Cruise Construction, that's looking at using Port McKenzie as a marine base. We've got Usabelli and another potential coal company wanting to export coal. If a gas line comes down from the slope, like the Alaska Standalone Pipeline, which is the preferred alternative right now, I expect there'll be a $1 billion investment at Port McKenzie or near Port McKenzie for a separation plant and a plant that would separate out the natural gas liquids, the propane, butane, pentane, and ethane that comes along with the methane. And so there'd be a fractionation plant built at Port McKenzie. There's nothing but potential, tremendous potential for development at Port McKenzie. And if you have any long-range vision at all, I think most people realize we've had tremendous support from the legislature, from the governor, and from the residents of the Matsu Borough for the development of the port. That's why I'm still there. I have the most positive job in the Matsu Borough. Everybody supports what we're doing there at Port McKenzie.
How about that, Bob? Any other questions?
I would just say the legislature just cut down the amount of money that the Matsubara asked for in the bond measure and as a direct appropriation. So I don't know where the strong support in the legislature is, but I appreciate the feedback. Thank you, Mark. I'll give others a chance to weigh in, and thank you, Kathleen.
Thanks so much for calling. Those are good questions.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We're going to just put the phone numbers out there one more time, 550-8433 and 1-888-353-5752. If you've just joined us, Mark Van Dongen, the director of the Port of McKenzie, has been taking questions all the hour about development and expansion at the port. I had a list of things, Mark, I was trying to get through, and one of them came up in a question, which was, you know, your relationship with the Port of Anchorage. People have said, why do we need two ports? You've always said there are two different functions at these two different ports, at least at this point in time. Could you flesh that out just a little more?
Well, the main thing, you know, the bread and butter for the Port of Anchorage is importing container ships.
Yeah.
And so all of our food and cars and retail products come in through the Port of Anchorage off of container ships. That's their bread and butter. The bread and butter at Port McKenzie is exporting natural resources. So we have two really separate missions, and I believe they're complementary. Port of Anchorage can't bring in, to be able to export large volumes of commodities efficiently, you've got to have big ships, and the ships we bring in can't land at the Port of Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And so we're not taking business away from them. We've taken a little bit away. I made one example there of the cement, but I think the region is benefiting much more from that.
Yeah.
And our focus is not to take business away from the Port of Anchorage. It's to do something that we're better able to do at Port McKenzie.
Mm-hmm. One point I was thinking about is that it might be handy to have two ports and so close to one another because the Port of Anchorage is old. And it's got old pilings, and it's still working at repairing that, renewing it, but it isn't there yet. If we had some kind of earthquake like we've had in the past, that might be pretty handy to have Port McKenzie as a backup.
Well, I can't argue with that. Mm-hmm. The Port of Anchorage has been here for 50 years, and, they're having to upgrade the piles, and they've got a design for upgrading the port, which I support. You know, we need the Port of Anchorage for importing containers. We need it. It's a strategic military export and import, you know, for MOB and DMOB for military missions. We're always going to need the Port of Anchorage. But we also need Port McKenzie if we want to develop mines in the interior and create jobs and open up areas for commercial and industrial development within 2 miles of Anchorage. That's a real value to the region here from developing Port McKenzie.
Now, I want to jump to the phones because we have had a number of people trying to get in here. Welcome, Andrew. You're calling from Palmer?
Yes. So I just had a real quick question. I was wondering if your guest could give us a total amount of money that's been spent on the port and also give us a total number of customers who have actually used it.
Okay, Andrew. I mentioned earlier for funding, we spent $7.2 million on the initial barge dock. We spent $14.7 million to build the deep draft dock. And we spent about $2.5 million for our barge dock expansion. So just under $25 million is what we spent to build our docks at Port McKenzie.
And how many total customers have used it?
You know, I don't have a total on the number of customers. I can tell you we've had a wide variety of commodities that have both been imported and exported from Port McKenzie. We started out with wood chips and saw logs. We've exported sand and gravel. In fact, we exported 451,000 tons for the Port of Anchorage project that helped save the construction for the Port of Anchorage there a couple summers ago. We're now importing cement. We're exporting scrap metal. We're getting ready to export coal. We've already done a test shipment for coal. And so that's just going to continue to increase. And once the rail is completed, there'll be significant net profits every year at the Port of Anchorage, or at Port McKenzie, as opposed to other ports that barely break even or lose money every year, not counting dredging costs.
So, Andrew, I want to thank you for your call. I'm trying to squeeze a few more callers in. We've only got about 3 minutes left. Could we move on to another caller?
So he's stating he doesn't know how many customers have used the port. Is that what I understand?
Go ahead.
I don't have a total number on the customers. I explained the type of commodities that we've been importing and exporting. We've also brought in barges where we have taken containers off of barges. We've had heavy equipment move in and out of Port McKenzie for construction projects up and down the inlet. As far as the number of customers, I don't keep track of that.
Is there any chance you'd put anything up on your website, or is there something you could get your hands on, Mark, and share on the web or anything like that?
We probably can do that. Okay. We could put a summary of what we've shipped thus far.
Okay. All right, Andrew, let me move on. Thank you so much for your call. It was good. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Ryan, we're trying to squeeze you in. What's your question?
Yeah, well, as other callers have alluded to already, the Matanuska Borough has a history of relying on inflated economic projections and lowballing O&M costs, operation and maintenance costs on this stuff. The ferry and the prison have been cited. I did a little research, and I saw that some of the early studies showed that you were going to be paying about $2 million a year in O&M costs, and now you're saying the newer studies are showing $150,000 a year in O&M costs. I'm wondering what changed and who's going to pay for that if you run over the $150,000. And I also did a little looking, and I see that the Port of Anchorage pays about $12 million a year in O&M costs. And you said that you were going to end up being a larger port than them. So I'm just wondering where this $150,000 number is coming from, and if we're actually going to be in the $12 million range, who's going to end up footing the bill?
Got about 30 seconds.
Okay, so are you referring to O&M for the docks? What O&M are you referring to?
Well, the $12 million Port of Anchorage number I know does not include the railroad.
So I think, I'm not sure what they all use it for there at the Port of Anchorage. I know they replace some of their pipe piles every year. A large portion of that probably goes to that. I can tell you in the first 13 years since we built our barge dock, we haven't had to spend any money on O&M. I've made a one-time request to our assembly just earlier this week for $282,000 to add some sacrificial anodes for cathodic protection to our barge dock, and that'll be the first O&M money that we've spent in 13 years.
You know, I want to encourage people, if this topic really gets you going, you can comment on our website. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. We welcome this continuing engagement on this topic. It clearly has brought in a lot of people. So I really, really thank you for your call, Ryan.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I guess there are things we didn't get to cover, Mark, at all. I wanted to talk about you have a notion. You are a forward thinker and had these ideas of, ships coming in full and unloading and going off to deliver goods to them. And we're out of time. So I'm going to thank all of our callers for all these really great questions. And special thanks to our guest, Mark Van Dongen, the director of the port who came to Anchorage twice to do our show. And thanks to all the good questions from our callers. Next week on Hometown Alaska, we're featuring Alaska Native storytelling. Just last weekend, I heard the Alaska Native Oratory Society in action. And we're going to have some of those storytellers on, Polly Andrews and Jack Dalton. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.